The following is a public lecture at Australian National University, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 2nd, 2008, in Canberra, Australia.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Dham Sajivam Sadaitam Savadrutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha.
So we have come here today to Canberra, Australia, to try to spread this knowledge by which everything becomes revealed. Here at this university, there are so many departments of knowledge. People are trying to advance themselves in various ways, in this department, in that department. But there is one department missing here at this university. What is the name of this university? Oh, this is Australian National University. Okay. There is one department missing here at Australian National University. And that is a department that can distinguish between a living body and a dead body. You see? Is there any such department here that can distinguish between a living body and a dead body? Can tell what is the actual difference between a living body and a dead body? You see? Where is such department? They have their various theories, but the actual difference is wherever the Atma is present, the living entity, the driver of the body, when he is present, then it is living body. When he is not present, it is dead body. Just like we came here today in an automobile. Now the automobile is sitting as a dead body because there is no driver. It cannot function on its own. But when the driver is there in the automobile, then it can drive through the streets of Canberra, getting from one place to another place. The car itself is dead. It is simply dead matter, some metal, some plastic, some glass, some wires. You see, itself it is dead matter. But when the living force, the driver, is there, in the car, it can function in so many ways, doing this, doing that, going here, going there, you see. So similarly with this body. Did you know that your body is just a vehicle, and right now it's parked here. You parked your body here in this parking lot, seated here in this chair. So it's not really you. It is just an instrument that you are using, a vehicle that you are using in various ways. That is the actual reality. So this knowledge is not understood. We think that I am the body. I'm thinking I am male, You were thinking you were male or female, you see. If I say all the women raise their right hand, all the men raise their left hand, everyone will immediately identify male or female. But actually we have nothing to do with this male or female. It is simply a covering. The actual identity of the living entity is neither male nor female. So, you may ask, what does this have to do with the topic? And I'm going to explain now how this all ties together. The Vedic solution to the global crisis. A few weeks ago, everybody thought the global crisis was global warming. But now it's becoming clear that actually that's not going to be such an issue after all, because there's not going to be any fuel to do the warming with. Everyone's concerned about excessive emissions, you know. But there's not going to be any more fuel to do the emissions eventually. It's running out. So even though global warming appears to be a big issue right now, gradually there'll be no fuel left to do the warming with, you see. We'll face a world situation. Well, the basic thing, well, how do we get food? Because right now we're basing our food is based on petroleum. Petroleum-based fertilizers, petroleum-powered tractors, petroleum-powered trucks and airplanes that transport the food to the cities. And we use petroleum to get to the grocery store to buy the food. You see? What to speak, if you really trace it back, how many jobs are dependent on petroleum also? That's another matter. Even making money is dependent on the petroleum in many ways. So how is the petroleum becomes, now in the U.S. it's 4 times more expensive, when it becomes, what it becomes 6 times more expensive, or 8 times more expensive than it was in 1999, when it was $1 a gallon. What if when it hits $10 a gallon, you see? How will we function as a world society? The Vedic culture has the solution for all of these problems. The Vedic culture is based economically on the land, the cow, and the bull. And they don't require petroleum. The land doesn't require petroleum. The bull and the cow do not require any petroleum. So if we can learn how to live in the natural way that even 100 years ago everyone lived that way, if we can learn to live back more in a land agrarian-based society where you have your own food growing in your own land, you don't worry about the price of food because it's growing right there in your yard. It's free. Simply we need to have the rain, that's all. And that's another issue in Australia now. But as I was pointing out a few moments ago, the rain problem is due to the fact that we are not performing sacrifice. So we're going to do a little sacrifice today in this meeting to help bring the rain and to, by pleasing the Supreme Person. But the actual formula for success is to engage in yajna, to chant the holy names of God for the pleasure of the Supreme Person, and then live in a very natural way with the land, the cow, and the bull. This is a sustainable socio-economic system that can go on for thousands and thousands of years on this planet, as it did in the past. It can continue to do so. The air will be more clean. All the air pollution will go away. It's actually very beneficial. The water will become clean again. The air will become clean. We simply have to get back to a land-based, agrarian-based society, depending on the cow and the bull, and on chanting the holy names of God. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, but it's something we're going to be forced to do gradually. Just by the mere economics of the world situation, we'll be forced to do it. We have no choice for survival on this planet as a human civilization. We can't live in these big cities where the food is trucked in from 1,000 miles away when it's too expensive to even pay for the fuel. We can't afford to pay the fuel to get the food to the cities. Consider how many trucks are going to New York City every day with all the food, and how far they're coming with the food, and how many airplanes are coming with the food, and how much cost there is involved in transporting all of that food, and how expensive more it becomes. With every passing year, the fuel becomes more expensive, more rare, more expensive. So the Vedic culture, based on the spiritual identity of the self and a land-based, God-centered concept, is actually going to will solve all the world's problems. That's a thing. So how does this spiritual conception of the self that I introduced at the beginning of this meeting, how does it tie into this solution for the problems of the world? As long as I'm thinking that I'm the body, you see, then I'll be inclined to look for those things which give me instant gratification for the body. That's what city life is oriented around, instant gratification. You see? But the spiritual conception of the self, one's happiness is based not on instant gratification, but it's based on engaging in activities that are pleasing to the Lord. What happened to my cup?
Left in the car.
Oh, what was the good of bringing it then? It's in the car.
I just put it.
So, this Krishna consciousness process that we are teaching enables one to find happiness, a much more deep-seated happiness than that which can be experienced in the combination of the senses with the objects of the senses. In other words, when I think that I'm this body, then my happiness is going to be based on gratifying the senses. What is pleasing to my eyes? What is pleasing to my ears? What is pleasing to my tongue? What is pleasing to the genitals? In this way, you see. But that sort of happiness is always very limited, because in the material existence, there's a duality of happiness and distress. If my happiness is based on the external happiness, then I am sure and certain to never be fully satisfied. Because at one moment I'm feeling happy, the next moment I'm feeling sad, at one moment I'm being praised, the next moment I'm being criticized, you see. Material nature is always like that. That's the nature of the material existence. It's a world of dualities. Matra sparsha stukonteya shitoshna sukha dukada agama payano yashtangstatikshashvabharata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O sign of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So there's always going to be the dualities in this material nature. Just like on the surface of the ocean, there's always the waves, up and down, up and down. But if you go deep within the ocean, then you're no longer being influenced by the waves, you see. If you go deep within the ocean, so spiritual life or Krishna consciousness means to go deep within the ocean of existence, to reconnect oneself with the Supreme Person. On that level, the dualities cease to exist. On that level, you can find unlimited happiness. Naprahrishyat priyam prapya, nodvijat prapya cha priyam, stidabhudhira sangmudo brahmavidramanistitaha. One who does not rejoice upon obtaining something pleasant, nor lament upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. So this is the science taught by the Vedic scriptures. This is the science which is taught by a bona fide spiritual master or by a saintly teacher. How to achieve that state of consciousness, where you're no longer being carried away by the dualities of material existence. You're not excited one minute and then depressed the next minute, you see. It's an even keel of satisfaction in the relationship between the individual self and the Supreme Self, who's the source of all existence. by reconnecting with that Supreme Person who is indeed the source of all existence, then one finds unlimited happiness simply in that relationship. It has nothing to do with one's external circumstances. You can be rich, you can be poor, you can be famous, you can be ignored, you can be sick, you can be healthy, you can be wealthy, you can be poor, you can be old, you can be young. It doesn't matter what your position is. Once you reawaken your dormant relationship with the Supreme Person, then no matter what the material nature may throw at you, you see, you're satisfied by that spiritual connection you have with the Supreme Source of all existence. So, if we can train, if we can spread this knowledge to the general population of this planet, how to actually become satisfied in their relationship with the Supreme Person, the source of all existence, then people will be satisfied with whatever material necessities are easily available. They won't have this idea that their happiness is based on a lot of material advancement, and they have to work like dogs in a corporate atmosphere, you know, going through tremendous austerities of commuting long distances for many, you know, spending 12, 13, 14 hours a day just to get the money so they can have that little bit of sense gratification. But one who's actually awakened in their relationship with the Supreme Person, the source of all existence, they become completely happy and satisfied with whatever material necessities they can easily acquire without difficulty. And therefore, they live a very stress-free, blissful existence, full of loving relationships, full of peaceful, happy days and nights. And in this way, they live their life very happily in this world and also in the next world. So perhaps some of you have some questions. I'll be happy to try to answer them. Any questions? Questions?
It appears that the material world is based on self, on greed, and
the material society is currently based on the principle of greed. That's right. That's right.
And whereas Krishna consciousness takes you away from self-centeredness.
Yeah. Well, right now we have a very self-centered, everybody's in it for themselves, basically. It's a very self-centered sort of culture that we grow up in. Everyone's taught that, you know, we're trained in such a way that we think that we're the center of existence. And whatever is pleasing to me, that's good. And if it's not pleasing to me, it's bad. But that's not a very workable model in the long run for a peaceful, happy world society where everybody's number one. I'm number one and you're number one, and that's fine as long as we don't clash with each other. As long as our... It's like you can throw some rocks in a pond, you see. If I throw my rock in the pond, some concentric circles of waves will come out from that rock. You throw your rock, you see. At some point, those waves are going to clash with each other. That's when we have problems. That's when we fight with each other. That's when we have murders. That's when we have wars, you see. That's when we have ill will and anger and fighting. Because our waves of I'm the center, they clash with each other sometimes. But if you throw your rock in one place, and I throw my rock in the same place, and you throw your rock, and everyone throws their rock in exactly the same place, then there's no clash. All the waves then work together in harmony and make one huge, wonderful wave that goes throughout the entire pond, you see, in a wonderful display of water activity. So this is what we really need in the world to solve the global crisis. We need to have a common center. This is described in the Isha Upanishad. Isha vasham idam sarvam yat kincha jagajam jagat tena chakchena bhunjita ma grida kushasviddhanam. Everything animate or inanimate, that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, knowing well to whom everything else belongs. So, as Gandhi said, there's enough for everybody's need, but not enough for everybody's greed, you see. As long as we have a society based on I'm the center, everyone thinking that they're the center, everybody's going to feel a need for a lot more than they really need. Everybody's going to have a greed for more than they really need. And then we have problems. But if we actually learn how to be happy by just taking what we actually need, that's our quota given by God. If we're happy just to take what we need and not more, and not what we greed after, what we lust after, then everyone can easily be happy, you see. Every person, every man, woman, and child in every country, in every corner of this planet can have proper food, proper shelter, proper clothing. When you have some people taking more than they need, then other people are suffering, they're starving to death, you see. You have countries which are growing so much food and then dumping into the ocean while people are starving to death in other parts of the world, you see. They want to dump it in the ocean to keep, out of greed, to keep the food prices high so they can make profit, they can make money. They care more for money than helping their brothers and sisters who are starving to death. I know, I was flying back from India one year, and I noticed in the newspaper there was a huge crop of these very, in Southern California, they grow these navel oranges, really nice oranges, very tasty, delicious oranges. And they had a huge overabundance of them, so they just piled them up and let them rot. Meanwhile, a few miles away, there's Mexico. They could have easily trucked them down to Mexico and distributed them freely to poor people, you see. But no, they don't want the price to go down. For the sake of making profit, they will let people go hungry while they let these wonderful oranges rot, you see. So this is a society based on greed, you see. So, if we can learn how to be happy just taking what we need instead of what we're greeding for, then the whole world can become peaceful and happy. So in this way, we are giving practical information how the world problems can all be solved, you see. We have a world which is perplexed now with so many problems, so many, many problems. But the solution is very simple, very, very simple thing. You see. We're going the wrong way trying to solve the problem. Just like if your nose is itching, how will you scratch it? Will you scratch it like this? Or will you scratch it like this, you see? The trouble is, we're trying to scratch our noses like this. In the modern world, we're going about it the wrong way, trying to solve the problems. The solution for all the problems which are besetting the world at the present moment is a very simple solution. We simply have to reconnect with the source of all existence. Because we are not in a state of harmony with that source of all existence, everything is going amok. Just like, consider a symphony orchestra. When I was a kid, I used to play in the orchestra when I was in high school. So you have one person up there, he's called the conductor, you see. And he has the score there, and he has a little baton, he's going like this, and everybody follows the conductor, and therefore the orchestra plays together in a very wonderful way. Everyone's working under the direction of the conductor, we made some really cool sounds, you see, under the direction of our conductor. I forget his name, but we had a very qualified conductor. In fact, he was in charge of there was an all-city orchestra, and he was in charge of it too, I think. No, there was someone else. Anyway, that's besides the point. But everybody thought, well, I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm not going to follow the conductor. then it becomes mayhem, it becomes chaotic. So there's actually a supreme conductor for all of existence, and that is God, the Supreme Person. And if we can simply all follow the direction of that Supreme Person, then everything becomes very peaceful and harmonious throughout the entire planet. But as long as we try to do our own thing, thinking, well, why should I follow the conductor? I'm also a conductor. I will conduct. I will do it my way, not the conductor's way. So this is the problem. Everybody's thinking they know better than the conductor. But the actual directions of the conductor are clearly given in the scriptures, just like we have here Bhagavad Gita, which is the main scripture of the Vedic culture. There are other scriptures in the world, but in this particular scripture, the Bhagavad Gita, God Himself is speaking. This is a very unique scripture. For 800 verses, well, there's a few from Arjuna, but the majority of 800 verses, God Himself is directly giving instructions on how we can perfect our consciousness and how we can perfect the global society. So it's a very, we encourage all of you to purchase this book today, give a contribution for the printing costs. We have them on the book table there. Why don't you bring that Bhagavad Gita? I can hold it up. Especially we recommend this book, Bhagavad Gita as it is, because this book is actually the key. If this book is read and followed, we can solve all the problems of this planet. The energy crisis, the global warming crisis, food crisis, terrorism crisis. This book will indeed solve all the problems of this planet. So what I'm speaking to you today is not my own words, but I have studied and followed these teachings under the guidance of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I have followed and taught this sublime Bhagavad Gita philosophy since 1971. And now that I'm seeing the world situation is becoming more and more critical, I'm just trying to... I'm putting more and more energy into teaching this. I'm talking so much I get hoarse, but I keep talking anyway because the world is in a desperate need for this knowledge, desperately needing this knowledge. And the whole world is being plunged into, it's becoming more and more a chaotic situation. So we require that there be actually enlightened leaders on this planet. So I'm hoping to inspire many, many people to come out of the sheep mentality and come into becoming a leader on this planet. I'm requesting all of you to become global leaders who understand this philosophy, who live this philosophy, and who share this philosophy. You see, I'm hoping that all of you will become leaders, global leaders on this planet, to guide the society out of the chaos that they're going into, deeper and darker every day. So any other questions? Yes, that's one of the symptoms. Instead of, just consider how cruel and impersonal it is. We take our mother's milk when we're little babies, and then we graduate to the milk of the cow, and we go on enjoying yogurt and ice cream and so many things. And then we think, well, when she stops giving milk, just kill her. I mean, what sort of gratitude is that? Can you imagine? The cow is eating food that you cannot eat. Can anybody here digest grass? I know I can't. The cow is taking grass, which is growing freely in the field. It's so easy. The cow just eats things that grow naturally. We don't even have to plant the crop. They can eat the grass. We can't digest it. And they produce the most wonderful foodstuffs full of all vitamin values. Of course, we adulterate it now by homogenization. Make it hard to digest. But actually, you take natural milk from the cow, you boil it very nicely, and you drink it. It's the most nutritional, delicious food you can ever imagine. We ruin it now. What you get in the store is, I call it chalk water. Even the organic stuff in the U.S. depends. In California is not bad. There they let you sell the milk without being homogenized. But in most states, they require to homogenize it, which makes it very difficult to digest it. So, but actually the cow's milk in its original pure state is very healthy, very nutritious and delicious. And it's utilized in so many tasty ways, you see. So how we can, when the wonderful animal who's given us so gentle, beautiful animal, who doesn't harm anyone, who's very sweet and contented animal, he simply gives us her milk, very happy to give us her milk. How we can butcher her when she becomes old and dries up. You see, it's just so cruel and heartless. So you can imagine the karma that comes from this kind of cruelty. You see, Newton gave the law, different laws of motion. And one of his laws was, for every action there is an equal opposite, an opposite reaction. So according to Newton, if you kill a cat, Newton's principle, If you create a motion of murdering an innocent creature like that, you can expect to get an evil and opposite reaction. That's called karma. And the Bible also says, as you sow, so you reap. So we can expect that if we engage in activity, in cruel activities upon innocent creatures, that we're going to have cruel things happening to us also. And this is what Buddha was teaching. So the intelligent person, he gives up activities of harming innocent creatures as far as possible. He becomes as gentle and as nonviolent as possible to not harm others. And in this way, he becomes peaceful and happy. Is it? Any other questions?
The garments that you're wearing, what are they made out of?
What is it going? Okay. I'm hard of hearing.
Oh, sorry. The garments that you're wearing, what are they made out of?
Oh, the garments. There is like this is cotton. There's no petroleum in my garment.
No, I was thinking more along the facts of farming. Cotton is very wasteful of water, and if you're wearing raw silk, which I think you are, that is the process of from an animal as well.
Yeah, there is what's known as ahimsa silk also. Where one does not, the silk is, there is non-violent silk also available. So we try to buy that kind of silk, ahimsa silk. Of course, even by our breathing we are killing. There are so many microbial germs in the air that by inhaling we are doing mass murder every time we inhale all those microbial germs in the air. That's why the Jains will put a mask. They try to avoid any sort of harm committing by wearing masks. So if we really look at it, I mean, just walking down the street, how many ants do you step on? I mean, it's very... How do you avoid committing violence in this world? Completely avoid it, that is not possible. So one has to then live one's life in such a way that you become free from the reactions of the unavoidable killing that one does. Just like an ambulance driver, if I run a red light, I will get a ticket, you see. But if the ambulance driver on an emergency run runs a red light, he will not get a ticket. So if one is actually engaged in activities, authorized activities for the benefit of the society, then he can run the red light without being punished. Similarly, if one is actually engaged in activities for the benefit of the entire society, according to the revealed scriptures, according to the bona fide spiritual master and the great saintly teachers, then even if one, you know, accidentally steps on an ant, one doesn't get the karma for it. So therefore, This is called, in the Bhagavad Gita, this is known as devotional service or bhakti yoga. If one can engage in activities of service to the Supreme Lord and dedicate one's whole life in that way, then whatever sinful activity you may do, it is excused. Just like, for example, killing a cow is certainly a heinous crime. But someone may say, well, you're eating a potato. A potato is also living. I know it's living. I can put it in a glass of water and it grows a sprout. So what's the difference between killing a cow and killing a potato? Actually, in one sense, there's no difference between killing a cow and killing a potato. You're a murderer either way, you see. So, I guess does that mean we have to starve to death? Some people could interpret it like that. But Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita gives us license that if we take foodstuffs in the vegetarian category, fruits, vegetables, dairy products, and grains, and we first offer them to him before eating them, then that is allowable. There's no sinful reaction. And that potato, there is actually a soul in the body of that potato. It's called jiva. The actual jiva who is residing within that potato, which was offered to the Supreme Lord in a sacrificial way, he advances in his repetition of birth and death to come to the human form more quickly than he would have if he hadn't been offered to Krishna, if his body had not been offered to Krishna. So these finer details are actually all dealt with in the Bhakti Yoga system. The intricacies of, you know, doing this and what kind of reaction you'll get, all those things are actually covered within the Vedic system. And the finest details of how to become perfectly in harmony with the supreme source of all existence, the supreme person. You bring that water cup. Those things are all worked out. The great sages who have taught this system for thousands and millions of years, everything is there, how to perfectly be in harmony with the Supreme Consciousness. Of course, we're really skeptical, you know, we've been cheated by so many so-called spiritual leaders who actually had material motives that it's difficult for us to put faith in a spiritual master nowadays. So many shysters in the name of guru have, done their trip. But just because, just like when I went to India one time, as I was leaving India, I had some rupees, Indian rupees, so I was trading them in for some American dollars. When I got back to the U.S., I can't use rupees in the U.S. So I had of course, the rupees aren't worth much. A 500 rupee note is maybe like 10 US dollars, something like that. So I had a few 500 rupee notes, and I was trading them in, and they gave one of them back. I said, this one's counterfeit. So someone could think, well, there was a counterfeit rupee note, therefore I have nothing to do with rupees anymore. I will never deal with rupees anymore because I was cheated by a 500 rupee counterfeit note. No. Counterfeit means somewhere there's the real thing, of which it is a counterfeit. So that there are counterfeit gurus who are using the name of guru to exploit people, make money, you know, have illicit relationships, etc. Does that mean that I reject principle? No. I don't. I have to find the real thing, of which this is an imitation. You see, that's all. So I was fortunate to find a bona fide spiritual master after so many shysters who actually was teaching a pathway, a pure pathway, a real, genuine pathway of attaining spiritual perfection and acting as an agent for bringing about a perfect global society. So any other questions? Anyone else who didn't ask a question yet? I'm going to give everybody a chance. All right, you're good. You're the first one who started off. We'll keep going with you.
From what you're saying, and what I've heard is that, isn't it true that in this material world, it's full of cheaters and cheated, and we're all cheaters at some stage and cheated?
Is it true the whole material world is full of cheaters? Yeah, it is sometimes stated, this human society is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. Yeah, it's sometimes said like that. So it's very rare to find someone who's not cheating us. It's not easy. It's not an easy thing. Because the whole thing is based on cheaters and cheated. So if we can actually find a bona fide teacher who's giving us genuine knowledge, then how do you tell the difference? Well, it is stated in the Puranas that it's very easy to find a guru who will take away your money. It's very difficult to find someone. Thank you for coming. Check out our books on your way out. He'll show you. Merrick will show you our books. But it's very difficult to find a guru who will take away your anxiety, you see. So that is the genuine teacher. Instead of picking your pocket, you reach in your heart and take all your anxieties away. If you can find a teacher who actually does that, and over the course of time, you know, you have to test it after not just one incident, but over the course of time, you can actually study this person. Is he have something, he's trying to get something out of me for his own personal sense gratification, or he's really trying to serve me? He genuinely loves me. He genuinely is trying to serve me and help me become completely liberated from all anxieties. If we can find a person like that, which I found in my teacher, if we can find a person like that, then we have a good place to get receive spiritual education. And they are rare. It's very rare to find such teachers. They don't do it for money. It's just like here at the university, there's so many. You're a professor? Okay. Are you a professor? All right. There's so many professors, but they do it for a salary, you see. They wouldn't come here. I didn't want to step on anybody's toes, you know. They do it for a salary. If they were told, okay, well, no more salary, just come here and do it for free, how many of them would do it, you see? But a bona fide spiritual master, he does it just out of love, you see. He just wants to help people to become happy. He doesn't do it for any material gain. Any other questions?
Maybe those teachers would like to live in a world where they don't need financial reward for helping others, but the practicalities of everyday life, and perhaps their wives and children might want to eat. So
no, that's also there. Everyone needs something to cover their maintenance. That's a thing. In the Vedic system, the teachers would accept donations, and because people appreciated them, they lived just on the donations. The whole principle was based on giving and not on taking. It's not that they would make a deal, all right, how much are you going to donate? I'll see if I'm going to teach you or not, depending on how much you'll donate to me. It wasn't like them. Whereas someone nowadays, they may say, well, how much salary are you going to pay me? If you don't pay me this much, I won't work for you. Of course, nowadays, because we have an artificial society where you have to have so much money just to pay your rent, you see, that makes it difficult. That's a thing. But formerly, the socioeconomic system was not so much based on an artificial standard. Just like when there was a saintly teacher back in a few centuries ago, this is an example. There's a city in what is now West Bengal called Krishnanagar. In this city, at that time, there was a kingdom in those days. There was a king. His name was Krishna Rai. So Krishna Rai heard there was a brahmana, which means a saintly teacher, living in his kingdom who was poor. And that disturbed him. He said, no, no, no. I am very dedicated to the brahmins, the saintly teachers. I cannot tolerate that there's a saintly teacher, a brahmana, in my kingdom who is a poor man. I will go there and I will bestow all riches upon this saintly teacher. So he finally found out where the brahmana was living. He was living on the edge of the kingdom under a tree with his wife. They had no house. They would sleep under a tamarind tree. So he said, Brahman, I heard that you are poverty-stricken. I have come to bestow all wealth upon you. And the brahman said, poverty-stricken? What do you mean? He said, don't you see we are sleeping under this tamarind tree? When my students come for lesson, they bring a palmful of rice. My wife, she cooks the rice with a leaf from the tamarind tree, and it becomes very delicious. How you can say we are poor? I don't need any wealth. We are in this way, you see, the saintly teachers. And even we see even in the Western culture during the Greek era, during the time of Alexander the Great, in the Greek Empire, the philosophers were highly respected. So there was one philosopher, his name was Diogenes. He was living in a barrel, you see. So Alexander the Great, he wanted to serve Diogenes. He heard he was a great teacher, so he wanted to serve him. So he went there, and he went to the barrel. He was looking down. He says, "Diogenes, oh great teacher, Diogenes, how can I serve you?" He said, "Please get out of the light. You're blocking the sun." So this is the actual standard. Of course, you know, it's natural nowadays. One would need something to pay your rent and your groceries, etc. That's understandable. So we don't want to step on any toes here. But the principle is that those who are saintly teachers, even if, and we even see that sometimes nowadays, people will actually. I recently met a leader from the Mormon Church. He was taking a leadership role for 3 years in the entire Baltic countries, the leader of the Mormon Church. He was actually a real estate developer who, you know, was a wealthy man. He had two houses. So what he did was he sold one house and took that money to go to live off of his own personal money to spend 3 years as a church leader. And this is actually a very good model. He earned his own money. He spent money for the privilege of being a spiritual teacher instead of asking to be paid for that. And he told me in the Mormon Church, practically every leader in the church, except a very small number, they all make their own money and pay their own way to be a teacher. They don't ask the church to give them a salary for being a leader. So that's a nice model. Let's see. You somehow get your own money to cover your own expenses, and then donate your time for teaching spiritual knowledge. That's a very, very sincere position to be in. I mean, you're not doing it for the money at all, not even for your maintenance. You're paying money for the privilege of being allowed to teach the knowledge, you see. So I do that myself. Somehow we get donations. I come here to teach the local members of our community. I don't demand that they pay me something to even cover my traveling. Of course, if they ask me, I can say, well, it cost me this much to come, and whatever you donate will help me to pay the cost of coming here. But I don't make that a condition. I go to many places where I spend money to go there, and I get hardly any donations at all. But I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing it to spread the knowledge. You see, I'm not a paid worker. I'm not on any salary. I just, whatever donations come, somehow that I keep. This is my wife here, Vishnupriya Devi Dasi. We travel all over the world giving this knowledge, and whatever donations come, we somehow stay on the road by God's grace and going to the next town, the next town, the next town, all over the world. But there's no set fee. I didn't charge a fee to give this lecture today. You see? Just whatever comes by the grace of God. So we can, now who knows with all the oil price, how much these airline tickets are going to keep going up and up and up. But somehow or other, the Lord Krishna is covering our preaching expense. As we continue traveling around the world, for many years we've been doing this. We don't charge any fee to go anywhere and give a lecture. Any last questions? Actually, our time is up. Anybody have last question? One last question that you've been wanting to ask but you're hesitant to ask? We could do a little mantra chanting now, since we did bring the instruments.